The following broadcast of Sioux Valley Voice was recorded earlier. You will not be able to call in during the next hour. You can listen to past episodes of Sioux Valley Voice online anytime at ktna.org. You're listening to KTNA 88.9 FM Talkeetna. This is Sioux Valley Voice. I'm Philip Manning. In just under a week, the Alaska State Legislature will gavel in the fourth special session of the year. The topics set forth by Governor Bill Walker include the enactment of a broad-based tax and a bill on crime and sentencing. Joining us today on the program are Representative David Eastman and Senator Mike Dunleavy. If you have questions for your legislators, you can email them to dj@ktna.org or call 733-1700. Due to the logistical requirements of having both our guests on the phone, we won't be able to have listener calls on the air, but we would still very much like to hear from all of you. And we are still waiting to hear from Representative Eastman as well, but we do have Senator Dunleavy on the line. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Philip. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us. And we can go ahead and get started. We talked a little bit last night and at the gathering in Sunshine, but definitely saved plenty of questions for today as well. So first of all, let's talk a little bit about just what's been happening in the interim between the very long regular and then extended session and then the special sessions and now. So what's been happening?
You know, so there hasn't been much of a break, right, because we were in session basically till July. And so between now and then, what has really taken off and come to the forefront? I mean, certainly the fiscal issues are there. They need to be worked on. Folks are discussing them. But the issue of crime centered around the bill SB 91 that was passed the previous year. And SB 91, the stated purpose, the intent was to when I say save money, what I mean is, given that there appears to be more and more individuals going to prison and with limited funds, building more and more prisons became questionable, there were movements across the country, especially in Texas, that approached public safety in a different way than I guess has been traditionally looked at, and that was for those crimes, violent crimes, especially against people, the idea was to increase those penalties, keep those folks in jail, reserve jail space for those folks. But for folks that were involved, let's say, in drug offenses or lesser crimes, to try and keep them out of jail and try and get them alternative programs to reduce recidivism and try and get those folks back in the mainstream. That was my understanding as to what the purpose of 91 was. It was a very large bill, 140-some pages, I believe, many different sections, over 120, 130 different sections of the bill. It was a large, comprehensive bill that touched upon all facets of public safety, from the courts to probation to law enforcement, corrections, again, programs to try and remediate some of these lesser, quote, lesser offenses. The bill was passed by both bodies. When that bill came back for a final vote, I was a no vote on the bill. And as I explained to Senator Coghill, who worked very hard on this bill and worked for some time on this bill, it was, for me, it was too large of a bill to be able to digest and thoroughly understand. I basically operate under the principle, Philip, that if I can't explain a bill, I shouldn't be voting on it. And if I can't explain a bill to my constituents, I shouldn't be voting on that bill. So I was a no vote on that bill. And so with the recent increase in murders, especially in the Anchorage area, theft across the state of Alaska, especially in the valley in the Anchorage area, this issue of public safety has come to the forefront. And so In the special session, we do have a bill, SB 54, which was put together to try and remediate or fix some of the issues in 91. And so that bill is going to be discussed. And they're also on the, docket is another run at taxes by the administration.
Okay, and we'll get into some of the finer points of that in a little bit. But I want to start with these public meetings, public gatherings, town halls that both you and Representative Eastman have been a part of. So, and you, I know you've got more planned for this week as well. So thus far, though, what are the takeaways that you're getting from your constituents regarding public safety as a whole? I know you build it as not specifically about SB 91 and 54, its potential, you know, which is designed to kind of fix some of the issues that have been, that have come up. So what are the general takeaways you've gotten thus far?
From constituents, whether it's in the meetings such as we had last night or in smaller meetings, smaller groups, in the informal get-togethers and phone calls and individual meetings, folks are very concerned that 91, at the very least, may be an exacerbator for somebody's crimes. And their concern is that although the attempt may have been under 91 to deal with those, quote, lower-level crimes or crimes that were really not assaults on people, such as murder or sexual assault, that these crimes are leading to other crimes, that these crimes, along with an increased use in opiates, actually are kind of gateway crimes, for lack of a better way of putting it. And so the concern is that these crimes are leading to larger crimes or more crime. These crimes are going to end up causing a loss of life, because as individual Alaskans feel that their property and their own personal safety is under assault, they're going to start to take matters into their own hands. And so they view 91, again, as an exacerbator to an already large, growing crime issue that's let Alaskans have for some time. And so they want it dealt with. And what I'm hoping to do is expand the conversation, put a little more of a historical context to it, and basically get us all to focus on public safety, and not just momentarily, but for the long run, so that we make this a safer state.
Okay, and so on, I believe it's the 23rd is when the session starts, so next Monday, 60 legislators are going to be making their way back down to Juneau in order to try to hash some of this out. And so we want to get into it a little bit more, and you've brought some of this up, but crime's been in the news a lot lately on a statewide level. And you know, even on a local level here, we're getting, you know, more reports from the Alaska State Troopers of theft and burglary and that sort of thing than we've seen in the recent past otherwise. And, you know, in Anchorage, the term Grand Theft Anchorage has come up, a play on both crime of Grand Theft Auto and the popular video game. So, you know, you said that this is an exacerbator and that these lower level crimes can lead to escalation, I suppose, and an eventual loss of life. Is there, or at least that's what your constituents are telling you, have you seen evidence from the law enforcement side that that's the case, that once these lower level crimes do increase, because as you mentioned, SB 91 does actually increase the penalty for things like murder. So from the law enforcement angle, or anyone in a position that sees this day in, day out right now, are they saying those things as well?
Okay. Yeah. And it's interesting because I'm glad you clarified, Jess, too. What I thought were two different questions, at least in my mind, and that was, have I seen the evidence, and have they said?
Right, yeah.
Right. Yeah, no, that's good. We're looking at data to try and ascertain the evidence side, the data side. But I have had conversations with law enforcement, and they do believe, when I say they, I don't mean everybody, but certainly some of the folks that have come to me in law enforcement and some prosecutors have come to me to say that, in fact, they believe that they are seeing a recycling of the same individuals who are becoming a little more brazen. And their concern is that this recycling and this brazenness, for lack of a better expression, is going to lead to some serious encounters with the average Alaskans. It's interesting when you bring that up. I was thinking about, I've lived in this state since 1983. It's always had a high crime rate. Sexual assault has always been an issue here. But what's changed is a mindset, and that was up until recently, if you read about these incidents, Philip, you always thought it was the other guy. And I think we've turned the corner because now when I talk to folks, they don't think it's the other guy anymore. They think any moment it's going to be them. And that, I guess, is telling. That is, that's certainly a shift in the mindset that this concern that they don't even want to go to certain places in some of our larger communities in some areas of some areas, for example, even the Valley, because they feel that they could become the next victim. Before then, like I said, it was the other guy was the victim. You read about the other guy or the other woman, and now it's it could be me. So the concern is certainly legitimate. The concern is real. The concern is there. The question is, how do we deal with it? And as I mentioned earlier, my concern is that, you know, the focus has been on 91, and as I mentioned, it certainly is an exacerbator. But we've got to be careful that once 91 is dealt with, in whatever fashion that's going to be, that we don't fall asleep at the wheel again, that we have to keep public safety in the forefront. We have to come up with a multi-year plan to address it, and we've got to look at statistics to make sure that we aren't number one in crime, but we actually become safer with time. I think it's a crucial component, probably the most important thing a state can do. And so that's going to be something I'm going to push that so that the state focuses on.
Okay. So last night when I attended the meeting you held in Sunshine, there was a very long list of sections, as you mentioned, and we went through some of those with your staff and kind of detailed, you know, where sort of the big things were, where some of the sticking points were that people were having issues with. You mentioned that's a lot of property crimes. The punishment for those has decreased, and the thresholds for, you know, when you escalate to a felony level theft versus a misdemeanor theft, those have been bumped up a little bit. Is there and in the case of, you know, Class B, I think it's under $250 under the current iteration of SB 91. That's not necessarily somebody's not going to go to jail for that. At least the first few times, probably, that they get caught for it, there's going to be, you know, a fine, whatever, and they're going to be turned loose. And SB 54 kind of ratchets that punishment up a little bit. So with regard to that sort of thing, specifically with the low-level theft that does seem to have increased over the last few years, and we're hearing a lot more about it now, do you think you favor something more like 54, where the first time you still get a bit of a slap on the wrist, but then as if you continue to exhibit the same sort of behavior, then you start looking at jail time? Do you think that's the right approach, or is it going back to what we had before?
I think nobody should be rewarded for committing a crime. I don't think you should be rewarded for that. And what's happening, and this is anecdotal right now, what's coming to me from some merchants, some folks that have actually seen certain things happen in law enforcement is, for example, you mentioned the basically shoplifting. So you have individuals that are actually surfing and going from store to store is what is being relayed to me. And they are basically filling up their carts with items, goods, from the stores that don't meet that threshold of $250, but let's say it's $200 that they're stealing. They are literally walking out of the store, and sometimes the merchants, you know, are beside themselves because with all of the other crimes that the police are dealing with and the prosecutors are dealing with, basically the sentiment is there's not a lot we can do about those folks. It's low-level crime. It's not a lot of money. And we've got bigger fish to fry. And so these folks are being rewarded for this activity. Now, whether it's related to the opiate use and increase, et cetera, it doesn't really matter. The point is people are being victimized, and they're starting to feel helpless. And again, I think that 54 or some approach like that to tighten these up is certainly what we should do, we need to do. because, again, people shouldn't be rewarded for their criminal behavior. And I think what's going to happen is you're going to find that some of these folks that are stealing at this level and in this manner, they're not necessarily stealing canned goods to feed their family. Some of these folks are involved in, unfortunately, the drug situation. And, you've got a thriving underground drug business going on in this state. And these folks, I think we're going to find are part of it. So, again, I do think that by tightening this up in 54 or some similar vehicle, I think is going to be better for Alaskans. Alaskans should not be victimized. We should certainly help people that, may have fallen prey to an opiate addiction because of an accident and a prescription, et cetera, et cetera. Surely get those folks some help. But if you're engaged in the drug trade for the purpose of making money without any regard to human life or the consequences of the activity you're engaged in, I think there should be consequences for that.
Sure. And so we've been talking a bit about shoplifting. I've got some personal experience in that regard. Before I moved up to Alaska, I spent about five or six years in the retail loss prevention world. And it's what you're hearing does seem to jibe some with what I was hearing back in Texas, interestingly enough. Of course, this was before some of these reforms, some of these changes went through when I still lived there. But what was interesting and what I had never really realized, I guess, is in Texas at the time, there was a theft level that was classified as a Class C misdemeanor. And so that was a very low level. I think it was below either $25 or $50. And that was the level at which, you'd get a violation, you'd get a ticket, you'd get whatever. And then above that, then it started, a Class B misdemeanor carried heavier penalties. And the felony level there at the time, I want to say the felony level there was about $1,200, if I'm not mistaken. It's been a few years. But in that world, I think you do see, I think we're seeing here the sort of things that my then colleagues and I were seeing there, which is you do get these rings of, organized retail crime is what the industry refers to it as, where you do get these rings of people often based around drugs. Down there at the time, it was less on the opiate side and more on the amphetamine side, but where you would have a dealer or some ringleader who would send people in looking for a fix and they would walk out with, whatever, what have you. And so there is definitely a correlation in paperwork I've seen from back in those days between a rise in drug use and in retail crime. So let's get back to some of the things that are proposed to change, some of the things that are maybe not addressed in SB 54 as compared to 91. And you've alluded to it here, but last night you kind of started off your meeting by saying you haven't made a decision on whether to fully repeal 91 or use either SB 54 or something like SB 54 to shore it up a bit. So let's take a moment and talk about, are there things in SB 91 that you think are a net positive in addition to the things that are maybe exacerbating the situation, as you put it?
Well, I mean, certainly, I think when you commit an offense against an individual along the lines of some type of assault, whether it be sexual assault or murder, you really need to. I mean, those folks across the line, like I said earlier, it's different than if you're shoplifting canned goods to feed your family because you fell in hard times. I think everyone would view it that way. But you really got to send these folks to prison. If you're brazen enough to hurt somebody, cross that line, to physically assault them, murder, rape, some of the horrific beatings we've read about over the years, those folks are a danger to society. Those folks are a danger to the individual and society at large. Those folks need to be dealt with. So in 91, the sentencing for murders was increased. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a positive. And I think that's what jails were designed for, especially those people that just cannot be in society. And so that would be an example of something I think should survive whatever happens to 91. And, you did mention, I did say that I have not made a decision yet on where we go
for example, with 91, whether it's a full repeal or whether it's trying to take what's best out of that and transfer it to another vehicle. And that's part of these listening sessions here last night, today, and tomorrow, is to get us as much information as possible and then go over our notes and then come up with a decision as to where we're going to go. But, again, going back, that's an example of something I think should stay in place. And I think it's a good thing. I think it's good for society to lock these folks away.
Okay. So, and you mentioned, we'll actually give you an opportunity now to go ahead and I'll ask you again at the end about the remainder of the listening sessions you have scheduled. So when and where are those happening?
So we have one that's tonight at 6 o'clock at Teeland Middle School in Wasilla, in the core area.
Okay.
So it's going to be in the cafeteria in Teeland Middle School. And then tomorrow up in Delta, we have one in the city council chambers. That'll start at about 6 o'clock as well. So those are the three areas that cover most of the district. We didn't have one in Valdez. It's just an issue of time and distance. And we didn't have one in, for example, Whittier. But I think this is going to give us an idea of different parts of the district. And it is a pretty big and diverse district. Give us an idea what people are thinking on how we should approach 91 and 54. I mean, what's interesting, and I don't want to get us off track here, but, you know, one of the takeaways I got from last night was that those folks that are arrested and convicted of a crime, they should not be coddled. As a matter of fact, my impression from the folks up in the meeting in Sunshine was they should be they should never want to go back to prison again. They should never want to even tolerate prison again. It should be Sheriff Joe Arpaio approach to modern incarceration and the prison system. And this is coming from some folks, and I've heard this, and this is a very interesting thing I never gave thought to until this discussion really took off. A lot of this be hard on crime and be hard on criminals especially is coming from criminals themselves. It's coming from folks that were actually arrested, whether it's a drug offense or other offenses, and were put in jail, and they felt that act, by being in jail, whether it's 3 years, 5 years, and there was one individual I talked to recently, it was 10 years they were in jail. They said it was that act that got them to change their life around and stop assaulting and hurting folks. And they're adamant. They're more adamant than just about anyone, which I find fascinating. And it's interesting because a lot of the folks that are advocating for less, let's say less sentencing, less punishment, are folks that are not criminals. And oftentimes are folks that are not victims. Sometimes they are social activists or social justice individuals, all well-meaning, but have never really been involved in crime on either end. So I find that fascinating that some of your staunchest advocates for a difficult prison sentence are former criminals themselves.
Okay, and I want to get into that. You brought up Sheriff Joe Arpaio, and we'll get into that in a little bit, and kind of the role of corrections and the justice system in the context of this larger conversation about public safety. But let's see. I want to make sure that we've hit. Oh, we were talking about things in SB 91 as it is that, and again, this came out at the meeting last night. It seemed like most folks were in favor of the idea of a pretrial services program, where essentially someone is arrested for a crime and they're arraigned, and then there is a process by which individuals and or an algorithm determine what the risk is that this individual is going to, or what the likelihood this individual is going to show up for their court date, is going to try to flee the state, that sort of thing. And then that can determine bail, can determine whether or not, they're released to their own recognizance, third party, things like that. That, based on the meeting last night, that seemed to have some traction. And what's your view on that kind of program?
Right. And you bring up a very good point. That's the purpose of these having these discussions with constituents. You're right. It did seem to have traction. And that is another item, the additional item, I should say, that we were looking at to see what the merit was, to see if this should survive potential repeal. You know, folks get arrested. But that doesn't necessarily mean they're convicted criminals. In other words, it doesn't mean that they are necessarily committed the crime that they were arrested for.
Right. Well, our justice system operates on the opposite, actually, right? Innocent until proven guilty.
You're innocent until proven guilty. And so the change in the pretrial approach would allow, under 91, would allow a more thorough look so that individuals that... if the evidence is not there, obviously they're going to be released. But for those folks that are less of a risk, do you want to keep them in jail, keep them in a jail bed, or if the risk is weighed and it appears, you know, pretty much that those folks are not going to commit a crime when they're waiting for their trial, are you better off dealing with them in another manner, whether it's a release, some type of tethering to the public defender's offices or the court system. That's something worth looking at, I think. And we're going to have, like I said, more discussions tonight and tomorrow night, and then my staff, myself, and others will get together. We'll do a bit of a huddle and talk about those areas and do some cross-referencing. We're taking notes. We're having discussions with folks. And, you know, the pretrial concept along with the stiffer penalties for assaults on individuals, those may be things that we advocate in our office that they survive any different approach to 91.
Okay, and so we're going to take a break here in a few minutes, but wanted to remind folks you're listening to Sioux Valley Voice on KTNA. My guest is Senator Mike Dunleavy. We're still hoping to hear from Representative David Eastman within the hour to ask him about some of these same questions. If you have a question you'd like answered, you can send us an email, dj@ktna.org, or you can call 733-1700, and Deb or Brad will be happy to take your question down and bring it back here so that we can ask it as well. So the next thing I want to talk about is going to be a bigger can of worms, and I alluded to it earlier, which is the role of corrections. I don't want to get too far into it since we're about to take a break, but just to, you know, think about there seems to be a sort of spectrum that people fall into as far as the role of the prison system, the role of correctional systems between punitive and rehabilitative. And when we come back from the break, I want to get a little bit into that and hear your thoughts, Senator Dunleavy, as well as those who are out there listening. So if you have thoughts on anything we've talked about before, or on the role of corrections going forward, the fate of SB 91, SB 54, or taxes, since we are talking about all the special session topics. Taxes are definitely inbounds as well. dj@ktna.org or 733-1700. We're going to take a quick break and be right back with more Sioux Valley Voice. Thank you. are listening to Sioux Valley Voice on KTNA 88.9 FM Talkeetna. I'm your host, Philip Manning. With me today, we have Senator Mike Dunleavy, and hoping to be joined by Senator David Eastman. But I think we're going to go ahead and potentially open up the regular phone line here at 733-1200. So if people do want to call in with a question, we should be able to accommodate you now. And we'll go ahead and dive back into, we've been talking a lot about public safety, some of the nuts and bolts of SB 91, SB 54, without getting too deep into the weeds, because as you mentioned, Senator, the bill, SB 91, is rather lengthy, and you can find it online, but I don't recommend printing it out unless you've got a fresh cartridge and a ream of paper handy. I've got here in front of me some of the things you handed out.
Philip, can I interrupt you just for one
Certainly.
Second? A Representative Eastman says he's trying to call in, but he's just getting a busy signal. Is there a number I can
send that? Yeah, it should be 733-1200. That's not working for him?
Okay, let me try this here. 733-1200. He has been trying to get in. And
oh, that's...
I just texted him the number.
So okay, I'll clear that line again to make sure that it's... that there's not an issue there. But, yeah, I don't think that line should be occupied right now.
Okay.
Yeah, my light's not on for it. So we were talking before the break about kind of the role of corrections, the punitive versus the rehabilitative. Oh, here we go. I think we've got it. I think we may have just had a crossed wire on the numbers there. So we're going to go ahead and see if we can get Representative Eastman on here. Representative Eastman, are you there?
Good morning, Phil. Yes, I am.
Oh, excellent. Glad you could join us. Sorry about the confusion there with the phone lines, but we're definitely glad to have you with us. Now, I'm not sure if y'all are going to be able to hear each other at this point. Okay, well, let's take a moment then and catch up with you, Representative Eastman. I don't know if you've been able to listen thus far, but Senator Dunleavy and I have been talking about public safety, SB 91, SB 54, and the dynamics around that going into next week's special session. Now, you, Representative Eastman, you've said on your official social media that you're asking for a full repeal of SB 91. Is that? But that was a little while ago. Is that still the case? Are you still looking for a full repeal?
Well, on my private social media, which of course is public access, I'm glad to make mention that SB 91 is what many of the constituents I've spoken with have requested. And so that is my position, and I believe an immediate repeal would be the best choice for the state going forward.
Okay, and is that in tandem with SB 91, or with SB 54, rather, using that as a vehicle, or starting from scratch, say, next session?
Well, I believe a repeal should take place first, and that should... if nothing else, clear the deck so that we can then begin to make whatever individual, well-thought, well-considered decisions. I think one of the problems with 91 is that you did throw a whole lot of things together, and there was less understanding on the part of legislators of everything that was involved. It was a complicated timeline about when different things would kick on and delays in getting to later phases of the process. And as that was coming out, we did not have strong public support and public buy-in. What's most important to me is that no matter what laws end up being passed, you have public buy-in. Because without that buy-in, you can have the best laws and the best policies, but if people don't feel confident that it's there for their benefit, then not only do they feel alienated by that process, but they're also less likely to perform their role. And the public has a very important role in any reforms that come out. If you are not comfortable and confident that when you call 911 that a trooper is going to show up, then you're less likely to call. And if you're not calling, then... how is the process supposed to work? It won't, and people won't be reporting the crimes. We won't have an idea of the crimes that are being committed. I think we're seeing some of that happen right now.
Okay, and sorry, we're trying to work through a little bit of difficulty there on the phone hybrids, but All right. So where we left off with Senator Dunleavy was right before the break. We talked a little bit about thoughts on the role of the correctional system and that spectrum between punitive and rehabilitative treatment of prisoners who have been convicted of, you know, any of the broad spectrum of jailable offenses that exists. So I want to give you each an opportunity here to kind of talk about where you see yourself falling on that spectrum. Senator Dunleavy, you talked a little bit about how, you know, prison shouldn't be comfortable, but how does that, at what point is there a room for rehabilitative care of prisoners who maybe could be introduced back to society? And do you have a concept of where you think that line should lie and that sort of thing? So we'll start with you, Senator.
Sure. I think that I think folks that commit crimes against people, they need to spend time in prison for what they've done. That would be the punitive aspect of it. But for those that seem to have a pattern, that's what they do, that's become their life, I think those folks need to spend a considerable amount of time, if not their entire lives, behind bars. Why? You got to protect society. To me, it makes no sense at all to release folks back into society. They're going to prey upon individuals. That to me is a fault of a correction system if that occurs. We should not have that happen. We should be able to do our best to protect individuals. Now, when you're dealing with somebody, for example, and this is just a low-level crime example, but as mentioned last night, an individual who's arrested, for example, with a DWI, their only DWI they've been arrested for, you want to hope that those individuals, the approach to them would be different than you would approach a murderer. The approach to these folks would be, don't do it again. You're lucky you didn't hurt anyone, if hopefully you didn't. But that is a threat to society. If you keep engaging in that behavior, there's going to be escalating consequences for that, because we can't have you driving around in a one-ton vehicle or more and hurting people, or potentially hurting people. But if this was a mistake, we're gonna make sure, and we're gonna work with you to make sure that mistake doesn't happen again. That's a different approach. That's rehabilitation. So I would divide those groups out. Those that are assaulters against human beings, once again, that they cross that line, those folks need to be dealt with, I think, in a different manner. Now, if God forbid, but you have an individual that was inebriated and assaulted an individual, is that a one-time offense? And was that a result of being under the influence? Well, we got to look at that case and see if those folks could be reintroduced back into society. Hopefully they can. But again, I would draw the line at folks that, you know, the reasonable man would look at and say, there's a pretty good chance they're going to assault again, or there's a pretty good chance that they're going to kill again, or there's a pretty good chance that they're going to rape somebody again. Those folks need to be put away.
Okay. So we'll take the same question now for Representative Eastman regarding punitive versus rehabilitative treatment of prisoners.
Well, one of the things that has been an issue here, and it's really hard to talk right now in that I can hear myself talking.
Oh, hang on. Anyway, we should be able to. Yeah, that might have done it. Is that any better?
Let's try. That's a little bit better.
Okay.
So actually, that's much better. Yeah, thank you. So one of the things that you focus on, whether you're talking about, you know, either aspect, you know, either side of that coin, is recidivism. And so we hear the numbers of recidivism thrown out. Now, one of the concerns that I have personally is that when we're talking about recidivism and how that means that, you know, we shouldn't be putting as many people in jail, or we should be changing the process because, you know, they come back into jail, I hear some people, you know, start to get dangerously close to, with the new reforms under 91, people aren't going into jail, and so our recidivism numbers are getting better. And of course, that may mathematically work out, but logically it doesn't. If you have somebody who committed a crime and you don't put them in jail, and then they commit another crime, well, that would be, you know, 100% of recidivism for that population. So we're not solving the recidivism problem by keeping people out of jail. The only difference is they're not in jail and they're committing more crimes, or perhaps the same crime. They just never spent, you know, time in jail in between. So my concern is the crimes and the victims of those crimes and bringing that number down. And so, you know, my position is much more, you know, a classic tough-on-crime position, not because I've spent time in law enforcement, but because my focus is first on protecting people, particularly the people who haven't done anything wrong. And so if you have a situation where they're not being protected, then I'm concerned and there's need for reform. And likewise, if you have a situation where by committing a crime and getting into the correction system, you suddenly, you know, gain access to benefits, perhaps, you know, dealing with like healthcare benefits that someone who hasn't committed a crime doesn't have access to, I think that too is wrong. And so that's a need for reform. So those are our two things that stick out to me right from the get-go before I get too deep into, you know, whether or not it's you know, restorative or rehabilitative or simply, you know, jail time on its own. But absolutely, I certainly sympathize with a lot of what Senator Dunley was just saying. You know, when you have someone who would benefit from treatment, then I'm all for it. And then the question becomes, you know, how to pay for it, and to what extent should the taxpayers be on the hook to pay for that? And of course, that ends up being a much more difficult question to get into specific details, but it's an important one to ask.
Okay. So you've both mentioned, you know, the potential merits of a rehabilitative system, and a name that comes up often with this discussion of the nature of corrections is, and it's actually come up earlier in this show, is Sheriff Joe Arpaio, formerly Sheriff of Maricopa County, Arizona. And look, I did a little bit of looking into it last night, Senator, after you mentioned, you know, the sorts of methods that Sheriff Joe, as he's colloquially known, used, caused a lot of controversy, and you know, I said, well, you know, where is there a world in which you'd be able to, we will be willing to consider some of those? And you mentioned specifically, well, it would depend on the impact on recidivism. So I looked into it a little bit, and the first thing that came up when I looked into recidivism in Maricopa County was let's see, from AZ Central in May of last year, there was an article here about how Arizona's recidivism rate is lower than the national average. I want to say it's like 34 as opposed to 48 nationwide. And specifically, they highlighted this program in Maricopa County wherein 4% of the participants who participated in this program, it's a reentry into society program, effectively. The participants in that program had a recidivism rate of 4%. And the supposition there from some of the officials in Maricopa County and the state of Arizona is that that program is actually giving a net fiscal gain to the state. The number here is something to the national average cost for incarcerating a prisoner is around $30,000 per year is what that looks like it says here. So for something like that, I mean, is there room for a reentry program along those lines in Alaska? Especially, I mean, would a potential fiscal benefit to the state, would that entice either of you into looking into a similar program? And we'll start with Representative Eastman this time.
Well, I'm very interested, but I'll have to start off by saying I haven't looked into that program, so it's something that is now on my list and something to learn more about. But I'm interested, and perhaps there's something there.
Okay, Senator.
I'm assuming for the sake of the conversation, what you said on that report was accurate, that the recidivism rate is lower and it costs less. Certainly we should take a look at that. I mean, we should take a look at anything that works along those lines. And, you know, the research in this has gone a long ways, but yes, certainly we should take a look at that. And I'm assuming, of course, that the criminals we're talking about are the individuals that have been incarcerated. We're not talking about murderers or serial rapists in this case, I'm assuming.
Right. That's correct. It's most has to do with largely substance abuse cases, what a lot of those are.
In that, certainly in that case, Alaska should be looking at that model and any other model that works to look as a potential something to potentially adopt for Alaska, certainly.
Okay. So, and let's see, I was going to double check something that was, it had to do with the nature of the crimes, and they had to, meet certain criteria to qualify, that sort of thing. And the idea there, I guess, is that it does cost more in the short term, but when they don't come back, you don't have to pay that $30,000 a year, which I'm sure is more expensive in Alaska because everything is, in order to keep them in the jailhouse. So, okay, well, we've got about 15 minutes left in the show, and we've talked a lot about public safety, and we can still talk a little bit more, but this all also ties back into the budget, and which has been the forefront issue for the legislature for the past 4 years now, 5 years. So I want to talk a little bit about spending on public safety issues, on the Department of Corrections. The Department of Corrections has had a rough few years with regard to you've had officials in and out. You've had a number of prisoner deaths in the correction system. And then the story that broke recently of some pretty shocking treatment of prisoners in the Alaska Department of Corrections. Going forward, how do we as a state cope with a shrinking budget constraints at the same, or potentially shrinking budget constraints at the same time as we have an obligation to, while perhaps not make prisoners comfortable, treat them constitutionally?
Well, you want me to take that one first?
Sure, go for it.
So, we had this conversation last night, and it was pretty interesting because I think the administration and some others are citing the cuts, as you mentioned, the corrections and maybe other aspects of public safety, and that these cuts certainly are at least exacerbators. Again, I keep using the term, but I think it's appropriate, exacerbators in adding to this public safety issue. My response to that is maybe. And what I mean by that is, Philip, back in 2012, 11, 10, we had unprecedented prices in oil. We were bringing in billions and billions and billions of dollars to the state, and our budgets were large. Our budgets were big, huge. Yet our crime rates, I think it could be argued, did not significantly drop with that increase in dollar. In other words, the more money, for whatever reason, I think it'll be an interesting research case for some young individual at the university someday as to why money was not, more money was not put into it. I do believe there was a lot of money put into the public safety concept, and what effect it had. Now, what I'm about to say is going to counter a little bit of that. Our trooper situation really hasn't increased dramatically for the past 20 years. I mean, that's documented. So I do think that the increase in revenue did not impact in a positive way the number of troopers. But I guess where I'm going with this is, as we look forward, we move forward, we're looking ahead. I think what we have to do is, once again, use this budgetary crisis to have Alaska refocus on what should be those priority items for any state. Public safety should be number one. And that's my biggest fear with 91. What I'd hate to see happen is if 91 does go away, and like I said, I haven't made a decision, I may be one of those that votes to extinguish it. But if it goes away, we can't lose focus and sight of the public safety issue that's been a bit of a problem for Alaska for decades. I think we need to make it job number one, and we need to reallocate resources that we have available and fund whatever it takes to fund public safety to bring down these criminal acts, bring down the crime rates, and make Alaska safe for individuals. So I'm not 100% convinced that more money, unless it's spent wisely and targeted, is going to make a difference. But I certainly believe that moving forward, we should look at public safety first when we allocate money for budget.
Okay. And Representative Eastman, same talking about the Department of Corrections in the state and whether or not how the funding for that and whether that's having an impact what we should look at going forward with regard to DOC.
Well, I guess I would start off by saying that since I don't have the benefit of hearing what Senator Dunleavy is saying.
Yeah, unfortunately, that was the only way to kill the echo.
Yeah, no, that's fine. But I am neither contradicting nor copycatting because I'm not sure what it was. But I would say, you know, I have experience working for the state. Both my wife and I have worked for the state. You know, I've worked at the borough level. I also served in the military. And so I've seen different levels and a variety of government experience over the years. And I would just have to start by saying that there is, you know, nothing about government service that, you know, guarantees a great outcome. There's nothing about our correction system that, you know, without accountability is just going to turn out well. And that goes for every other aspect of government, whether it's, you know, Washington, D.C., or it's, you know, a local, you know, city council. And so on the one hand, you know, reading some of the headlines, and I don't have personal experience in those situations, but just from, you know, some of the stories that have hit the press over the last few years, yeah, I mean, they're terrible situations. And I'd like to say that, you know, no, it couldn't happen here, but absolutely it could. And that goes for each of our communities. So you need good leadership, and you need consistent, you know, constant vigilance and accountability of all aspects of government. Certainly the legislature is there to provide part of that. But I mean, obviously the first person you go to for that accountability is going to be the governor. The governor's in charge of appointing the commissioner and of overseeing that. And the governor, I know he's aware of some of those issues. I can't speak for his, you know, plans and how he has been addressing them. I spoke with the commissioner of corrections. We chatted about, you know, his thoughts on how some of those reforms are going. I know it's in process, and I am supportive of some of those, but it hasn't come to me in terms of, you know, any legislation that's come before me to vote on yet. And I don't know that 54 is necessarily going to put a big dent in that. But I will say, as someone who, you know, had to send, you know, an individual to jail here in Alaska as a military judge, I was very concerned over, you know, what they were going into, sure, the environment that I was sending him into. So I, you know, when that was going on, I visited the jail myself and saw what I could see up close and personally. I understand some of the challenges that those in corrections face. I know it's not an easy job. I long ago realized that corrections was probably one career choice that I was not going to excel at all. And so I have much sympathy for those who do work and do try to do, you know, right by those that they're supervising.
Right.
So it is a difficult environment. There are excesses and abuses, and I'm sure that, you know, if you look hard enough, there will always be some of that going on somewhere in our state. And so our job is to try and be as responsible as we can to minimize that. And whenever you do find incidents of abuse, then, you know, you need to shine the spotlight on that. You need to figure out accurately what happened. And you need to with the public, figure out how do we, you know, minimize that ever happening again.
Okay. And I should point out that the story that's made news headlines this month regarding an incident at Spring Creek took place back in 2013. And, of course, there is a different commissioner of corrections than was in place at that time. So we've got a few minutes left in the show, and I want to give each of you a moment. I know that Senator Dunleavy, we talked a little bit about the upcoming public events you're having to gather more of these opinions on SB 91, SB 54, and public safety in general. Representative Eastman, I understand you've also attended some of those and are going to be holding more as well. So we'll start with you, and if you can give the dates and times and places where people can come and talk with you about their thoughts on these subjects.
Well, I do my best to always be available, and so people can reach out to me at any time. I know there's going to be another gathering this evening, sponsored and hosted by Senator Dunleavy. So I would encourage, you know, anyone that's in the Wasilla area to come out to that event. And certainly, those of us who are able to hear everything that's said, we'll take it in mind, and hopefully we'll have an opportunity to vote on some of these things here in the session. I would say also one thing that I don't hear talked about enough right now, and it's not, maybe as sexy of an issue as talking about the felonies and talking about the victims and the more dramatic sides of crime. But which is also important is when someone finishes, however long that is.
Oh, we lost you for a moment there, Representative.
All right, I'll back up a moment then. When someone's getting out of prison, we want to encourage and create opportunities for them to find a job. I think that's, as important as perhaps anything else on the road to becoming a productive member of society again and not winding up back in prison. And so I'm looking, and my staff is going to be looking here over the next short while, on what are the barriers that we as a government are putting in the way? What are the stones that we're putting in the path of those who do want to chart the right course? And I believe there are many ways that we're making it harder than we need to. So my goal probably next session, because I don't think it's gonna come up in the special session, is going to be how do we make it easier for someone to get those jobs.
That reentry into society we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, we do have a whole host of regulations and licensing requirements, whatnot, that, while they do serve a purpose, unfortunately, I think in a lot of situations you have somebody who's not coming, from a great position to start with, doesn't have a lot of resources. They have what they have coming out of prison. And if we're making it hard for them to step on that first rung of the ladder and start a career, then they may just give up and they may end up right back in prison. Mm-hmm. So we want to solve that part of it.
Yeah.
Well, and that, frankly, doesn't have anything to do with drugs or opioids or any of the rest.
Right. Well, I think there is research that would back you up on that point. So, Senator Dunleavy, another opportunity again for you to mention the time and location of the meeting tonight, I guess it is.
Thank you, Philip. So tonight, starting at 6 o'clock at Teeland Middle School, we'll have a public safety hearing in which the public is invited to come and speak. If there's a large number of folks, we're going to probably have to limit it to 3 minutes.
Sure.
Speak to the issue of SB 91, public safety in general, their experience lately with potential crime, and give us some ideas. So as we go into the special session, we take a hard look, a critical look at SB 91, 54, any other vehicles in public safety in general that we make the right decisions. And then, not that you're in the listening audience, but up in Delta tomorrow night as well, we'll be having a hearing at 5:30 at City Hall. But tonight at 6 o'clock, Teeland Middle School.
Teeland Middle School. All right. So we've got just a little bit of time left. And, Senator, you and I talked about this briefly last night, but just for the benefit of our listeners. Of course, you filed to run for governor next year and then suspended your campaign. And so is there any update on that at this point?
Probably next week. It's no secret that it was just dealing with some health issues that we thought we had under control with some medication. But I'll probably have some information, some news next week that I'll let folks know about. And
of course, all our best wishes for your health there as well. Well, that is just about all the time we've got for today on Sioux Valley Voice. I would like to thank Senator Mike Dunleavy and Representative David Eastman for joining me today. If you missed part of the show or want to listen again, Sioux Valley Voice will rebroadcast tonight at 7 o'clock, or you can listen online anytime at ktna.org. For KTNA, I'm Philip Manning, and as always, thanks for listening.